From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Linda Wertheimer. In Afghanistan, the most desperate victims of the Taliban's five-year rule are women. The Taliban have imposed the strictest interpretation of Islamic law in the world. Women are forbidden to work away from the home or attend school. Many Afghan women are anxious to see the Taliban driven from power, and yet they are growing skeptical of the U.S. military campaign in Afghanistan. NPR's John Burnett reports from Peshawar in Pakistan.
This interview between a male Western reporter and two male interpreters on one side and 15 girls and young women all showing their faces on the other would be cause for a death sentence if it were conducted 30 miles away from here in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. The men could be hanged, the girls beaten, and the woman who has brought them all together probably killed as well. She's a former Kabul schoolteacher named Gulalai Habib, who holds free literacy classes for Afghan girls in her tiny Peshawar home.
When you capture a bird and put her into a cage, the bird will not have education or freedom. But even the owner of a bird gives it food and water to keep it alive. The Taliban doesn't even treat us like a caged bird. They don't care whether we die in our houses or we live.
Her makeshift classroom is a 12 by 12 foot room that faces a courtyard at the end of a maze of mud-walled alleyways. Gululai, a big-boned, middle-aged woman whose eyes possess a quiet ferocity, leads the recitations for this group of shy girls in their headscarves. These classes are sponsored by a women's rights group called the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. This fearless, secretive organization has for 14 years documented the oppression of Afghan women and operated a network of underground health clinics, income projects, and schools for Afghan girls and women in Afghanistan and just over the border in Pakistan. One of the students is Besida, 14 years old, who tells the story of going shopping with her mother at a Kabul bazaar. The pair was discovered by a Taliban policeman with the infamous Department for the Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice.
They asked us what dealings we had with this man, what was going on. They came in the shop and started beating my mother and me for talking to a man who was not our relative. We said there was not a male relative in our household to accompany us. They wanted to take us to the base and beat us some more, but we begged for forgiveness and said we wouldn't do it again. They said if we see you again, it will be terrible for you.
Like all young women in Kabul, when she ventures away from her home, Besida must wear a burqa. It's a head-to-toe garment with a mesh face piece meant to completely obscure a woman, to protect her purity, and to keep her from distracting men from Islam.
During hot days, we sweat under the burqa, and we can't breathe properly. Sometimes we trip over the burqa and fall and hurt ourselves. I watch women on TV. They walk freely. They wear the clothes they want. They have a right to an education. They have the right to eat ice cream without having to bring it under the burqa. No, we were not even allowed to raise the burqa to eat ice cream.
When the Taliban swept to power in 1996, they were initially credited with protecting women from the abuses of the rapacious warlords who ruled Afghanistan. But immediately, observed Ahmed Rashid in his respected book on the Taliban, the oppression of women became a benchmark for the Taliban's brand of Islamic fundamentalism. Femininity was effectively banished. New burqas were not allowed. Women could only wear rough garments. Indeed, joy itself was suspect. The Taliban smashed TVs, outlawed music, and prohibited kite flying and building snowmen, all of which were thought to detract or distract from Islamic purity. Fifteen-year-old Huma was returning from the wedding party of a cousin last summer in Kabul when the religious police heard the celebration on their bus. Though they were with male relatives, she said the police sent the men to jail and shaved their heads. The women were ordered home. Their crime? Playing a tambourine and singing. Zaina, a 22-year-old member of the Hazara tribe, which came under especially brutal punishment by the Pashtun Taliban, fled her home in the western city of Bamiyan 5 years ago. She said her mother could stand it no longer.
We women were alive, but our soul was captured. It was taken from us. We couldn't laugh merrily. We couldn't do what we did before, go to weddings, go to one another's houses. We sat at home and weaved carpets just to earn money for food, nothing else. When I went to bed, I prayed for God to destroy the Taliban. I prayed to God to let them burn in hell.
No one in this class is quite sure whether God is now answering their prayers for retribution. During the first week of the U.S. airstrikes on the Taliban, Afghan women in exile rejoiced, says the school teacher, Gululai Habib. But now they're growing alarmed at the mounting civilian casualties.
This war has continued for a month, and we thought the American superpower would be able to easily destroy those two terrorists living in Afghanistan, Mullah Omar and Osama. But I would like to say to people in the Philippines, Pakistan, Indonesia, and all the other Muslim countries who hold rallies for the Taliban, we have lived under Taliban cruelties for 5 years. Just bring the Taliban into your country for 5 months and see what happens.
John Burnett, NPR News, Peshawar, Pakistan.